Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Always nice to have you with us. Today, from Mashhad University of Medical Sciences, comes a study about Somerian. That's from milk thistle. It can prevent hand and foot syndrome. That's a common side effect of chemotherapy. And that's a good thing, especially since so many people who get chemotherapy end up having that particular problem. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal Phytotherapy Research. And it means it's a topical application of the milk thistle extract. And we've known that milk thistle has been used to clean up your liver, especially if you've had food poisoning, if you've had alcohol poisoning, cirrhosis, hepatitis. But this is something different. So that's good. Anyhow, it's helping people, one more piece to the puzzle, and that's what we care about. In a moment, how the loquat, that was originally grown in China, brought back to Italy and hence Europe by Marco Polo, L-O-Q-U-A-T. There's wonderful taste in this loquat. Now, I recently had loquat in April, from a tree that was ripening, several trees actually, about the size of a large egg. Very sweet, yellow. It looks kind of like an egg. And then I have my own loquat trees, and I must have 40. And they grow about 1,000 loquat each, or about 40,000 loquat if you go to the health food store. And I saw them there. They were $3 each. And I think, my goodness, you know, I don't have the time, but I would have harvested them, dried them, and then had them to eat. So if you don't have a loquat, they're very hardy. They grow in all kinds of temperatures. And they can certainly grow in the areas of New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Pennsylvania. Wonderful tree. It grows very fast. You plant it today. Let's say you plant a 5-foot tree. You'll be getting fruit in about 3 years to 4 years. And lots of it. Comes twice a year. Anyhow, that's from the India's professional university. And it treats people with diabetes. It has strong anti-diabetic properties from a simple loquat. You eat the skin. There's a seed inside. And by the way, those seeds will grow loquat trees. There's anywhere from 2 to 4 seeds per. And that way you can start your own little nursery in your garage, basement, kitchen. People forget it. When you eat a tomato, you'll see inside and around the core of the tomato are little tiny white specks. Those are the seeds. And what is historically done all over the world is you'll take those seeds and dry them and then store them in a dry, cool place, ideally. And then the next year, you might have from one tomato 100 seeds. Hence, you could grow 100 tomato plants. And then if you got 100 tomato plants with, let's say, anywhere from 8 to 20 tomatoes on a plant, well, exponentially in 5 years, you have over, you know, 1 million tomatoes. I mean, it's huge. And but people almost always throw the seeds away. Don't throw the seeds away. Avocado trees you can grow from an avocado. A lot of good things. Anyhow, if you're a diabetic, loquat can help you. All right? Just one extra thing to add into your diet. In traditional Chinese medicine, the loquat is used to clear phlegm to help treat a cough or the flu. And they use it with ginger juice. And it helps relieve nausea and vomiting. It's also a common ingredient in traditional acne formulas because of their ability to clear the skin. Yeah, and this was published in the International Journal of Green Pharmacy. So simple things that nature provides has a lot of quality in other parts of our life. Who would have thought? And the plant leaves, just like the olive leaves, have antiviral properties, kills off viruses. That's why we should all have a bottle of olive leaf extract, about 1,000 milligrams, in our medicine cabinet or refrigerator, so when we need it, you get flu, cold, viruses, bacteria, it works. And loquat's rich in antioxidants, diabetic qualities, and the leaves in particular have tannins, T-A-N-N-I-N-S, and flavonoids, and what are called coumarins, C-O-U-M-A-R-I-N-S, and also steroidal glycosides, alkaloids, saponins. And these all are able to reduce blood sugar. And hence, that's why having the loquat at the end of a meal is like having a papaya or the core of a pineapple at the end of a meal. It assists with digestion if it's a papaya and pineapple. It also turns off pain in the body, especially people who have arthritic pain in the joints. It helps with that as well. Not the loquat, but the papaya and the mango. You find this all over the world. Go to the India or any of the subcontinents. Papaya and mango are commonly used, as is coconut. More on health and nutrition in just a moment, but also today we're going to have a short clip from a Dr. Northrup, Christina Northrup. She makes some interesting points that I would agree with, but then she makes some points that I believe should be corrected. We sent her a letter. We'll read you the letter. I have a lot of respect for her. She's done a lot to help with women's health issues. But I'm not sure where she gets her data, but we went to the original data and we found that it wasn't in alignment with what she was saying. So we're just asking her to correct it, and for good reason, because right now anyone who challenges anything against the official Anthony Fauci, White House, World Health Organization's comments upon coronavirus are being attacked. Also, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. was viciously attacked by Canadian journalists. So we're going to play you a clip today of Robert F. Kennedy. Really inspiring clip. Also, we're going to respond to some other misinformation that's out there. Some people are taking stuff from the internet without asking, is it accurate? So we've taken a lot of time and energy to go through this, and we're going to make some corrections. It's just that simple. Also today, we're going to hopefully have the gentleman on tomorrow live. But here's where we're at. A mainstream, highly respected, board-certified professor of medicine and board-certified in pulmonology. He is every day in the hospital at a university in Virginia. Very respected. He's published lots of articles in the peer-reviewed literature. When I was looking up his background, it's formidable. He is pro-vaccine. He's pro-orthodox medicine. He's not someone from the alternative or complementary position at all. So what did he find out? Well, in 2017, someone gave him information about vitamin C and on sepsis. Now, you may not know this, but sepsis kills an awful lot of people. It kills about, in hospitals, about 1,000 a day. Well, you're talking about over 500,000, way north of 500,000 a year. That's a lot of people. That's just in hospital. That doesn't include the 30% of people who die not in hospital. And there's almost nothing they can do about it in hospital. It's one of those conditions that they don't have, with all their armamentarium, some of which works in different conditions, this doesn't. Someone told him about vitamin C, so he tried it on one patient. And he knew that patient was dying. And when he gave the patient this IV infusion, and it wasn't a large amount, a small amount, I can promise you, everyone in this audience takes more vitamin C each day orally than this guy did with intravenous. But when he came back the next morning, lo and behold, the patient was still alive, and that surprised him. But her breathing had improved. And so he tried more and then on some other patients. Well, lo and behold, not too long after that, he was giving almost all the sepsis patients vitamin C with some other nutrients, including 100 to 200 milligrams of B1 and then an antibiotic, zithromycin. Well, he did well enough that he did a little film. We're going to play the little film today. And nurses giving their own testimony, because they're in the front line. And then the AMA came in and decided to duplicate his results. And they did, and found out that there was really no difference between those who received no care, you know, nothing out of the usual, and vitamin C. But there was. I read the entire report of the AMA, and in the very last minute of it, and there's a video of it also, it says that there was a substantially reduced, significantly reduced mortality, meaning less people died. Well, how's that not important? And that's why I don't trust anything coming out of the AMA. Remember, I'm one of two people, Jolisa myself, caused the AMA to have to reverse this entire medical ethics program when we discovered that there was a group of individuals working full-time in the basement of the AMA for 25 years to destroy all forms of alternative medicine. And the 12 largest medical organizations in the United States were sued based upon articles we'd written and documents we provided. And the AMA and these other organizations lost, clear up the Supreme Court. They had to acknowledge chiropractic was legitimate healing science, and therefore refer people to and receive referrals and not condemn them anymore, which they had done. Chiropractic was virtually on the ropes. It was almost done, dead, over, gone. They cut off insurance coverage, etc. Now it's thriving. Very few people remember that. This is the same AMA, by the way. So, jump ahead. And now, just this year in January, the AMA and a group of scientists from around the world convene somewhere in Europe on a symposium on vitamin C and COVID. Now, there again, I watched the whole presentation by the representative of the AMA, a PhD, not in clinical practice. And then he gets up. Well, he is angry. And we're going to play that clip. This is so rare to have someone who's in the heart of orthodoxy sitting at their table and go after him. And this is so rare, you got to hear it. And you wouldn't otherwise know this conference even existed. So we got a lot to share with you. We'll finish up right now on health and healing. There's another study, and it's all about vitamin D. And what they're showing is that in your throat you have it's a softening of the tissues in the larynx or your voice box. And the aim of this study was to determine the relationship between this particular condition and vitamin D levels. And what they found is when you're low in vitamin D, this can affect that whole part of your body. And that's important. So one more reason to take vitamin D. You protect your voice box. And that was in a peer-reviewed journal. Also from Tufts University, obesity and cancer metastasis, there is a connection. Why is that important? Because 1 in 2 men and 1 in 3 women will be diagnosed with cancer within their lifetimes. Fortunately, in the alternative field, there has been progress in the prevention and treatment of a wide range of cancers, particularly when they are localized in the small area and can be removed with surgery, which I support. But I do not support the vast majority of chemotherapy and radiation uses because they themselves are carcinogenic. In fact, one of the studies that I have cited shows that up to 50% of all deaths from cancer came from the treatment, not the cancer. And in some patients, though, the tumor cells break off and invade other areas of the body, what's called metastasis, causing widespread damage and making treatment much more difficult. In fact, 90% of cancer deaths are, based upon the scientific literature, are metastasis. So you end up with a breast cancer, but it metastasized to the bone or the liver or kidney or brain, etc. And the risk of metastasis is greater in some individuals, including those who are overweight or obese. Why obesity? Which affects Black Americans and Hispanic Americans more than the general population and appears to trigger metastasis at a higher rate. Well, now a professor of biomedical engineering, Dr. Uden, and her team at the School of Engineering have made some fascinating discoveries about metastasis and how obesity can promote it. This was published in the peer-reviewed Journal of Science Advances, and they have found that specific proteins in the scaffolding on which the cells grow, known as the extracellular matrix, can play an important role in triggering the invasion of cancer cells in the breast fat tissue of obese individuals. And so when you have a worldwide real pandemic in obesity, and it increases the risk of breast cancer development, you would think that we would have a national program to help people lose weight and deal with the issues that cause them to gain it. We don't. So anyhow, this is just the takeaway message is this. I've said many times that there's no safety in being overweight. When you're overweight, even though you can adapt, you may not feel anything, you're placing greater stress upon your heart, your circulatory system, your endothelium, your liver, your kidneys. Everything gets stressed. So it's very important that you do all you can to keep the weight off. Exercise and living with a plant-based diet, a clean, healthy plant-based diet, is probably your best way of doing it. From the University of Pittsburgh, an article published in Alzheimer's Dementia, Translational Research and Clinical Interventions, they talk about helping people with dementia by having more of the soy, let's say the soy ferments. Now, I did an article on this last week. This is just another study. What it means in lay language is that a metabolite of dietary soy creates certain types of gut bacteria, and that's a good thing. So I suggest people do something very mild. It's called a miso, M-I-S-O, and it comes from barley. You can also get one from chickpeas. It's kind of a cream color. It's not the strong, dark miso, which is has too much sodium, in my opinion, as the soy sauce. But this is mild, but it's loaded with good bacteria. And all you do is this. Boil some water, turn off the water, put in a tablespoon of this miso, stir it around till it disperses, which take about 20 seconds. Slice up some shiitake mushrooms, some green onions, and some seaweed, like hijiki. Put it in and stir it around and just let it steep for about a half hour. And then nobody should be eating anything hot, lukewarm. But then all that rich minerals from the sea vegetables are released. The anti-cancer agents, immune-modulating agents from the shiitake mushrooms are released. Mind you, mushrooms are only healthy when they're eaten cooked because the chemicals inside of the mushrooms are released with heat. They're not when they're raw. You don't have to overcook them, just lightly cook them. But letting them steep in hot water for a half hour, that does the trick also. And you just flooded the body, the gut in particular, with healthy bacteria. And that's good for your whole immune system. Also, one last thing. When we hear Anthony Fauci and the head of the CDC and others talk about, you know, drugs and vaccines, University of Buffalo just published a study. 34% of all older adults in the United States are prescribed potentially inappropriate drugs. In fact, research finds these patients are prescribed twice as many drugs and nearly twice as likely to be hospitalized or visit emergency room because of the drugs they've been given. So if we want to get people healthy and keep them healthy, then we've got to realize we're in way over-medicated society, but it's profitable. So the FDA, the CDC, U.S. Public Health Service, National Cancer Institute, none of these organizations, not one, not the Surgeon General, none of them are on your side. They're fully captured by Big Pharma because we would have had a national campaign on preventing illnesses, and we don't. We're looking at the least harmful way to treat a person, and yet we don't. So the statistics tell it all, and yet they're making profit hand over fist and about to make trillions of dollars. And that's unfortunate. By the way, someone yesterday asked me about their leukemia, and they thought they were doing everything they could. They're doing pretty good and great number reduction. But there's a brand new study today with myeloid leukemia and it's from Taipei Medical University, which is in Taiwan, and it's selected flavonoids. Like, one is called hispidulin, H-I-S-P-I-D-U-L-I-N. There's another one called lutein, L-U-T-E-O-L-I-N. And these have really good potential in the treatment of acute myeloid leukemia. That's the latest study on this. And so anything that can help, that's natural, this was peer-reviewed. We're at the end of our health and nutrition segment. We're 21 minutes in our program. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to go to two clips. The first clip is the doctor, and you'll hear all about him, an impeccable educational medical background, just talking about vitamin C and sepsis. But remember, one of the side effects of sepsis is the fluid in the lungs and not being able to breathe, very similar to COVID, very similar to influenza, very similar to pneumonia. So listen to what he's saying and then think, ah, couldn't that also be applied to these other conditions? So we're going to hear that. Then, that's not long, then a short clip of the nurses treating the patients and the doctor treating the patients. So that's good news. But instead of being supported by the good news, he was attacked. I mean, attacked. There's no such benefit to vitamin C. Well, sorry, there's tens of thousands of articles in the government's own PubMed on vitamin C. Its chemistry, its safety, efficacy, and its therapeutic range. And secondly, they attacked him personally. That got him angry. Then you're going to see a second clip of him responding as a woman from the AMA walks off the stage saying, well, there's no difference. And watch how he handles this. This is a lesson for all the other doctors and scientists who are now coming forward seeing how much misinformation there is on COVID. And by the way, today I'll be sharing a brand new article. It is now posted. It's called, it's all about, we just changed the title on it, but it's all about the flawed blind spots in calculating COVID deaths. I've been telling you this all along. Now, all over the world, tens of thousands of scientists, tens of thousands of physicians are pushing back against the establishment, against the way that COVID has been determined and how it impacts our lives. So this is to help all of them. So please download this article. It's up on PRN.fm. Share it with everyone you can. Back in a moment with the good doctor telling us about vitamin C, thiamine, and an antibiotic and what it does for sepsis. Something revolutionary.
Well, let's hear about this wonderful discovery that you made quite by accident, huh?
Yeah, so our goal was not to find the cure for sepsis, like most things that happens by pure chance. So this was actually going back to January last year. We had a 53-year-old lady who was otherwise quite healthy who came in with overwhelming sepsis. And I knew she was going to die. She was on multiple drugs to support her blood pressure. Her kidneys had failed. Her lungs had failed. And I just knew she was going to die. And, you know, when you're in a situation like that, you try to think out of the box, you know, what can I do to maybe help her? And a colleague of mine from MCV in Richmond had sent me a paper on vitamin C, which I read and thought was kind of interesting, but kind of tucked at the back of my head. So I thought, well, you know what? Why don't I try this? I got out the paper, I looked at how he had dosed them. And then I thought, you know what? That vitamin C acts like a hydrocortisone, which is a steroid. Why don't I give the two together? So we gave it to her, not expecting anything would happen. And I went home expecting she would pass away. The next morning when I walked into the ICU, she was off all of the vasopressor agents. Her blood pressure was fine. Her kidney function was returning. And we extubated her like 3 hours later. And I said, oh my gosh, what just happened there? You know, this was bizarre. So, you know, like most things, we thought, well, let's try it again. So we had, you know, subsequently two patients that were sick, not as critically ill as she, and exactly the same thing happened, exactly. So we thought, wow, this is really cool, maybe we're onto something. So we started using it more routinely and reproducibly, case after case after case. We saw exactly the same thing, that these are critically ill patients, and within 48 hours they were significantly better, and they left the ICU with no organ failure, which was remarkable. So based on that experience, we now use it as routine care in our ICU. And you know, we've up to date treated about 150 patients, and we see the same thing over and over again. And you know, the nurses at the bedside see it. The CEO of the hospital sees it because he knows about length of stay and mortality. So, you know, it's not us, you know, trying to pull the wool over someone's eyes. It actually does work. But the coolest thing about this is we have a colleague at ODU, Dr. Kotravis, who's actually interested in pulmonary vascular biology. He's like a world expert. So he actually took our formula and tested independently in the lab and showed exactly what we've shown in the ICU. So he showed that if you give so basically what they do is they take these cells and expose them to the toxins produced by bacteria. When you just give the toxin, the cells die. If you give hydrocortisone, the cells die. If you give vitamin C, the cells die. But once you give the combination, it protects the cells. So it's really the coolest thing, so that, you know, and this is objective data in the lab. So it's really cool that simultaneously we actually have shown that it works in patients, and we've kind of proved it mechanistically in the laboratory.
I believe I read that there was a third element.
Yeah, so we also added the thiamine. So it was kind of the first two or three patients we didn't add the thiamine. And then when I started reading about it, I thought there were a number of reasons. Firstly, thiamine is required for the metabolism of some of the metabolites of vitamin C. Secondly, there was a study showing that many patients with sepsis are thiamine deficient. And if you actually give them thiamine, it actually reduces mortality. And interestingly enough, there was a paper I read yesterday, which looked at septic shock patients and showed that those who got thiamine had a significantly reduced risk of developing renal failure. So, you know, so we think this is a very simple intervention. I mean, these are three commonly used drugs that are freely available, cheap, readily accessible, and then I think they act together to change the natural history of sepsis. It's quite remarkable. Now, obviously, we need further studies, which is, you know, what we would like to do. You know, we need to do more mechanistic studies to see exactly how it works, and we need studies at other institutions just to validate what we're doing is true. But since the word is out there, actually, you know, speaking to colleagues across the country, there are people actually doing this at other places and finding similar results. I got an email this morning from the Philippines, actually saying they read my paper and they've started doing this. So, you know, hopefully the word will get out there. It's cheap, it's simple, it's easy to do, and you really have nothing to lose. It's exceedingly safe. So, you know, those people who maybe are skeptics, there's no side effects. I mean, so it's a remarkable intervention that at the doses we use, all three drugs are completely devoid of side effects. So, you know, even if you don't think it's going to work, you've got absolutely nothing to lose, because, you know, how many drugs do you give that actually have no side effects or complications? So we're kind of excited about it. You know, people want us to do a large randomized trial before they'll believe it. You know, we think the data is impressive as it is. There's a significant amount of basic science and mechanistic data to show it works. And sometimes you just have to see it works. I mean, it would be, you know, the same thing as doing a randomized controlled trial of parachutes and people jumping out of an aeroplane. You know, you don't need to do a randomized trial to prove that the parachutes work. You just have to see it. And we see it every day. And I think the more people that actually try it out will see the results. And it's really important, because 1,000 people die in this country every single day from sepsis. You know, that's the equivalent of 3 jumbo jets crashing every single day. In fact, more people die from sepsis than die from breast cancer, colon cancer, and AIDS put together. So it's a very common disease. It's the commonest cause of death in hospitalized patients and costs our country about $20 billion a year. So obviously, you know, there are multiple, you know, implications that are involved.
Just for real quick in layman's terms.
Okay. The whole clip is 13 minutes long. You can see the whole clip. But mind you, this is just a highly respected, very well-credentialed professor of medicine, major university, published dozens and dozens of peer-reviewed papers, something you think wouldn't be that controversial. After all, no one else in the world, no other hospital clinic has been able to deal with sepsis. He has. He started with 150 patients. Then he just published the article in a peer-reviewed journal. And now he's attacked everywhere, a whole campaign. He's not used to that. So now this is 3 years later, where he has treated 1,500 patients, and his patients are alive. He's saving lives. So if mainstream medicine just incorporated this, then you could be saving over, well, they figure around 6 million lives a year. 6 million a year from doing something that's inexpensive. Now, he called them drugs, but thiamine's not a drug, and vitamin C's not a drug. But they're not doing it. Why? Who's behind the campaign to attack him? Well, there's the AMA saying, we did the study and there's no proof. They didn't do the study, just like they did by setting up Linus Pauling. In fact, he came on my program back in 1975 to talk about how the Mayo Clinic did not duplicate his protocols. They didn't. Well, they didn't duplicate this guy's protocols either. He starts treatment within hours, like 3 hours. They started treatment way at the end of sepsis when they'd gone into a death spiral and where it was impacting their lungs. And they didn't use two of the ingredients. They only used some vitamin C. And we're talking about 1,500 milligrams every 6 hours. That's nothing. And then they claimed it was the same study. It wasn't. Here's his response up on stage in front of a whole group of doctors from around the world. And this, his demeanor's changed a bit because he's been nonstop attacked for telling the truth, being able to show us the way to save lives, but orthodox medicine wants none of it.
It me that I should extend our sympathy to the Australians and all the Australian animals that have died with these terrible fires. Okay, could I have my slides, please? This is a clicker. So firstly, my disclosures, and this is important, I have none. I don't own the patent on vitamin C. I never invented vitamin C. I don't make vitamin C. I have no interest anyway in vitamin C. I also need to tell you I was invited many months ago to give this editorial response. Despite numerous attempts, I was unable to get the paper. I did not see the paper before I left the USA. I received the paper 2 days ago without the appendix, supplements, or the commentary. So that put me up at a significant disadvantage. I had planned previously 2 PowerPoints, depending on the outcome. But since I saw the paper and the Titanic disaster, my PowerPoints were no longer valid. So I had to, at the last minute, redo my PowerPoints. This put me at a severe disadvantage, for which I am really annoyed. So the other thing is, sepsis is a really complicated disease. You can't look at any intervention in isolation. This is really important. So we have just published a series of papers on sepsis. This is available in Journal Thoracic Disease. All these papers are available now as an EPUB. The journal will be published next month.
I need to highlight a number of really important topics. The first one is fluid resuscitation in sepsis, the great 30 milligrams per kilogram hoax. So we know, without question of doubt, that excess fluid kills patients with sepsis. We have Dr. Maitland here, who did the landmark FEAST trial, which clearly demonstrated this. And this has been demonstrated in multiple studies. There's not a single study that shows that under-resuscitation is harmful. We then need to talk about the origin of the lacto-bolo reflex. This is the mythology of giving fluids to treat patients with an increased lactate. It's based in some kind of Greek mythology. And lastly, Dr. Gerbes, who's sitting over there, wrote an outstanding paper on the role of randomized controlled trials in diseases as complicated as sepsis. So actually, I was here 3 years ago, and I presented our before-after study as before it had actually been published. And it's important to actually to go through the conclusions, because as it so happens, it's remarkably important how these conclusions actually are. So I said, our results suggest the early use of intravenous vitamin C to give them steroids and thiamine are effective in preventing organ dysfunction, including acute kidney injury, and reducing the mortality of patients with severe sepsis and septic shock. Please note the word early. I then said, additional studies are required to confirm these preliminary findings. Interesting, I never said randomized controlled trials. I said additional studies. So what's the philosophy behind HAT? So it targets the host's immune response to infection, anti-inflammatory and antioxidant. We use multiple agents with overlapping and synergistic biological properties. Most importantly, it's safe. To date, we're unaware of a single side effect. Let me say that again. A single side effect with this combination. Let me say that again. We are unaware of a single side effect. In our patients, we closely monitor oxalate levels and have not had a single patient with hyperoxalosis. And the most important point, this is cheap and readily available. And this is important because we heard yesterday, and we'll come back to this, 11 million people die of sepsis every year. Most of them are in third world countries or resource poor countries who cannot afford expensive drugs. Very important. And because of this, a lot of people just do not like me and this protocol. So the criticisms, and there have been hundreds, relentless. So we never heard this was a small retrospective study with non-concurrent controls, lack of blinding with single center. We never heard that. However, these are some of the responses from some of the world leaders in critical care. The results are totally implausible. This is snake oil medicine. This is no better than homeopathy. Vitamin C is not safe. It causes kidney injury. A highly invested investigator who's made false and preposterous claims. These are made by senior people in the leadership of societies that we belong to. The most interesting one was this is a local effect. Only happens in Norfolk. So you may not know that Norfolk is the biggest naval base in the world. We have 7 aircraft carriers, no one knows. So that people in Norfolk have scurvy. They're full of sailors. They all got scurvy. That's why it works. This was said with all seriousness. However, what people may not know is there are at least 400 peer-reviewed experimental, preclinical, and clinical publications evaluating vitamin C in sepsis. This didn't just come out of space. These are highly reputable journals, and highly reputable scientific studies, probably more than most other investigations in critical care. Most people want to be blind to this data, and the evidence is summarized in numerous review papers. So I'll tell you about our experience, because I'm a clinician. I'm not a trialist. I'm a clinician. I look after patients at the bedside. I've been doing this for 30 years. So we first patient was January 2016. We're now January 2020. We have treated over 1,500 septic patients admitted to our ICU. Importantly, most of these are medical patients. To any surgeons, yes, surgical sepsis is a different animal. Mixing surgical patients with medical patients is a disaster. I need to add, there are no exclusion criteria. If you are septic and you come to our ICU, it doesn't matter if you have HIV, sickle cell disease, kidney disease, end-stage renal disease, malignancy, you get treated. We've treated over 1,500 patients, and I can tell you the clinical response is reproducible. Reproducible clinical effect. Our nurses see it, our residents see it, our patients see it. It's very uncommon for a patient to die. They die of sepsis.
Okay, the whole clip is a long clip. You can watch the whole clip. I cut it off a little early because we're going to do another segment here. But what he goes on to say is, he then says that in our practice, you have to get the person in treatment with vitamin C immediately, like within 3 hours, if it's going to really work, 6 hours at the most. And yet the AMA study, it was 29 hours. And then he has the protocol. They're not using the same protocol. They didn't use thiamine. As you heard him say, thiamine has specific benefit for septic patients. And they didn't use the antibiotic, azithromycin, that they were using. And now he's added, I just saw the report today, he's going to be on the show tomorrow. So you're going to hear the rest from him right out of his mouth. What's it like to find a treatment that no one else in the world found? No one else. You're curing people, you're helping people, you're saving their lives, and you're attacked and condemned for it. Well, he's not alone. A lot of other good doctors, men and women in science, are being attacked at the same time. Richard Gale is a scholar, and he's worked within the genetic industry and at many different levels, and he is here now. Nice to have you today, Richard.
Yeah, Gary, can you hear me?
I can hear you fine. We're going to play this short clip.
And yes.
The reason we're playing this clip is this. We all want the truth about COVID. What's really the cause? What is the real science show? And what should be an appropriate public health response to save as many lives as possible? We find, and we've written multiple articles on this, that we have been given partial truths or flat-out lies, especially on how many people have actually died from the virus. So a lot of people are making statements up on the internet now that we find to be unsubstantiated or out-and-out wrong. I'm not questioning their integrity. I'm questioning they're doing research before they push this. And the latest one we're going to hear a few minutes of, because some of the things she's saying is correct, but some is not. And I don't want her discredited as a very reputable person and a voice for women's health because of this. Because let me tell you, there's an army of advocates for the pharmaceutical industry out there. We've seen it, we've exposed it, and they'll go after her as people have gone after this good doctor, and he was one of them. So let's hear this clip from Dr. Northrup, and then Richard will give you an analysis of what the actual statistics and facts show.
Is that there is a patent and work that they've done at MIT to make a dye. And the patent, the dye is called luciferase. And under a light, you'd be able to see who was vaccinated, who wasn't. And the deal is to store your biometric information, because this vaccine will have nanoparticles, nanocrystalline particles that are actually little robots. And they, like little antennas, and they will have the ability to take your biometric data, not only your vaccine record, but your breathing, your heart rate, your activities, sexual activities, drugs that you're taking, where you travel, all of that, and then take that data and store it in the cloud. What's even more concerning is that the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation on March 26, 2020, applied for a patent number 060606, to take that biometric data, give you a barcode and connect each of us to cryptocurrency so that we would become literally slaves to the system. Like everything, it would be the end of privacy, the end of freedom, because who gets the data? Who uses the data? And what do they do with it? So this patent to connect the vaccinated to cryptocurrency, making all humans a commodity, is extremely concerning. And everyone should be concerned, given that this is a virus from which 99.9% of people recover. So I would ask, why do we need anything like this? Because it goes far beyond those pandemics of old, smallpox and so on. This is very different. The plan here is to vaccinate the entire world. And the narrative that we're being sold is things will not go back to normal until everyone is vaccinated. Vaccinated with what? A transfection thing that we've never seen before. And by the way, once those nanoparticles go in, there's no detoxing from them. There's no getting them out of there. They combine with your DNA and you're suddenly programmable. And with the proposed 5G networks, the body would be an antenna where you could be controlled from outside of yourself. That's kind of worst case scenario. So that's what bothers me about the vaccine. And so,
okay. Richard, we have studied this. We've looked at the original information. What does the actual science show concerning her statements?
Well, I think there's two things she's making statements of. One is, first is this patent that she's making reference to, the Gates Foundation patent, along with Microsoft. But the patent itself makes no references whatsoever as this being something that's injectable, or any kind of a developed chip that would be implanted. It is connected with cryptocurrency, but the actual application itself. Oh, and by the way, this patent has not been accepted yet. It's still pending. So this is so far it's not. It's has been granted, so it's not applicable yet. But the patent does state that this is a technology that would be used in personal computers, cell phones, you know, tablets, laptops, smart devices and whatnot. And it requires the user or the owner's participation in its use, in which in exchange there's cryptocurrencies. So that's really what the actual patent states. But unfortunately, this message that's being given that this is implantable and it's going to be included in vaccines and all this, there's just no, it's something that's gone viral on the internet. And it's just a misreading by people that really don't understand or know what they're talking about, in my personal opinion. So, and then the other thing is, she was making reference to is the vaccines themselves. Yes, there is genetic engineering that is involved in this in these new vaccines, but a distinction needs to be made between the mRNA vaccines that Moderna is using, as opposed to Johnson & Johnson, AstraZeneca's vaccines, where they've engineered the adenovirus. So the mRNA vaccines that Moderna is doing, this is a whole new ball game of vaccines that have never been done before. And the mRNA vaccine is being designed to make your body produce its own viral protein. Okay, so your immune system would then mount a response to. When we had that Dr. Shakarit Bhakti on the show, the German doctor who was at Max Planck Institute and who was the chair at the microbiology division at the University of Mainz in Germany, he stated that he had a less concern about this fear that this mRNA from the vaccine would recombine with our body's DNA. But he did state he had deeper concerns about this vaccine, and we did write an article about that, an article we wrote about the playing Russian roulette with the COVID vaccines that people could find on the PRN website. One of the dangers is that this particular mRNA could mutate of itself. So that's kind of, in a sense, independent of just it being within your own body. But that was one of the great concerns, and then that could be passed off to one's offspring as well, and to children, especially if it's found in the reproductive cells. And then there was the very real danger about our body's immune system identifying this inserted genetic material as a foreign invader, in which case then our body would create anti-DNA antibodies that could then trigger all kinds of autoimmune conditions that we could probably be too many to rename. So that's just that. Gary, I didn't quite catch in that little clip. Was that part of the clip where she was making the reference to the Moderna vaccine and the adverse effects?
Yes, very quickly. She did make that. That was coming up next. But I wanted to have you answer this. She said that 100% of the Moderna vaccines people were having adverse effects, and I looked at their data, you looked at the data, and that's not what it said.
Right. The data was saying that there was, she didn't give the whole story to it, and this was in that phase one clinical trial, and remember there were only 45 participants in that trial that were divided into three separate groups, a low dose, medium-sized dose, and then a high dose. It was in a two-injection trial, so people received the first shot, and then later they got the second shot. So it was in the second shot that there was the 100% of the participants in the medium and the high dose groups that experienced side effects. And so we need to, I think the more important thing to, we should realize that these participants were very healthy. That's part of the game for these vaccine trials. You select only the healthiest people. You weed out everybody else. But 90% of Americans are metabolically unhealthy, or they struggle with chronic health conditions. I think one of the other things I would make note of is that the studies in the past with other attempts to make a COVID vaccine following the first SARS epidemic, and then there was the MERS epidemic, coronaviruses, that those studies, when they tried to make vaccines for those, there was the risk that was found throughout of what's called vaccine enhancement. So that means that where instead of protecting against the infection, the vaccine can actually make the disease worse in the event that the vaccinated person becomes affected with that virus that the vaccine is supposed to protect. And so this was this was found especially in the ferret trials that were done with corona vaccines, and there were quite a few earlier trials using ferrets. And one actually, look back, a good example of that was back in the 1960s when they tried to make a vaccine for the RSV virus, the rhino virus, which also contributes to respiratory illness, is very similar to coronavirus. And when they did that, they skipped over animal trials for that. and they went right to children. I think there were 35 children. And yes, they all developed very robust antibody responses that were very good, and it looked great. And then when the children were actually exposed later to the wild virus, they all became direly sick, and two of them died, and they had to abandon that vaccine. It was just shelved. And at the time in the 60s when they did that, it was a big embarrassment to the FDA and CDC. So we could face something similar to that.
Well, it would be far worse, because if you have as little as a 2% serious adverse effect and a virus is mandatory on a worldwide scale, let's say you don't go 7.7 billion people, let's just say you go 1 billion people, you're talking about well over a million people are going to have adverse effects, many dying. Mary Holland said that, who works for Robert F. Kennedy's group and was a constitutional scholar, lawyer, professor at New York University's law school, she said that she feared that over a million Americans could, or a million people, could end up with adverse effects. We've never seen anything on that scale. And driving all this seems to be Bill Gates and Fauci and other people, for whatever their reasons ultimately are, we can only guess, because I don't trust anything they would say. In any case, thanks, Richard, for coming on and explaining.
Okay.
The bottom line is this. I have a lot of respect for Dr. Northrup. I just know what the opposition that listens to this show, listens to all these shows, and they'll do anything they can to find you trip up on one simple little thing so they can then try to discredit you completely. And that's the game they're playing, and they're really serious about it. In fact, they're doing this now. They're attacking Kristen Miller. They're attacking all of the people who have stood out and made statements. And Mark Crispin Miller is an outstanding voice for reason, and he's being attacked. They're trying to eliminate many people on his own website. That was just out today, where people signed petitions, including his own brother and son, and their name's not there. So they're playing every kind of game they can at this time. So we have just to be diligent. Tomorrow we hear from Robert F. Kennedy Jr. We'll have the gentleman on live tomorrow that you heard him earlier, and we will also go over his protocol, which he's expanded. He's using Dr. Paul Merrick is using a lot of nutrients like quercetin that weren't in his original studies. So more to come. We'll keep you abreast of everything. Thank you for listening. Have a nice day.